What's the name of the podcast?
Proper Job.
Yeah. All right, let's do it. My name's George. I'm 26 years old. Oh, fuck. I need to start that again because I just turned 27, mate. All right. My name's George. I'm 27 years old. I'm a professional poker player. And my proper job is traveling around the world playing cards.
Great intro, mate. Full of energy as ever. Welcome to the Proper Job podcast. Let's just jump straight in, shall we? What are the common questions you get asked as a poker player?
Let's say the setting is I'm at like a family reunion or something, and everyone's caught wind by now of the fact that I'm a professional poker player or gambler or just some kind of opportunistic chancer, you know, that's sort of in the realm. So the questions will be, well, how much have you lost? You know, or what's your biggest tournament win? Or when are you going to get a proper job? And all of them hit home in some way, because I am quite a sensitive guy, which, you know, it hurts a little bit, because when you're passionate about something that the layman doesn't understand, it can be difficult to get that passion across when you're fighting an uphill battle from the get-go. So if you're passionate about gambling, and I'm also doing a lot of sports betting and a little bit of trading from time to time, but mostly sports betting and poker being the number one, it can come across for the average person as if you're just like some sort of addict, you know, like you have no idea what you're talking about. You're either like getting really lucky or something, or you're just some delusional guy that must be borrowing money or like having some sort of scam running, you know, to allow you to like feed this like addiction or whatever you want to call it. And that can be, and I'm a very good person, and this sort of translates into poker, at reading like the elephant in the room and the things that aren't being said when they're being said, if you know what I mean. So I find these kind of like casual questions extremely passive aggressive, you know, because it's not what they're asking you, it's the way that they are, the way that they're instantly deciding what you're doing in your life with actually having no insight into what a day-to-day life looks like for a professional poker player or a sports bettor, you know, because the common theory is that's not a real job, that's not a proper job, I don't believe in it. And whatever he says, I'm not going to listen to anyway because it's just fodder, you know? And that's the difficulty you get. And that's why sometimes, you know, I have been a little hesitant to go to some of these like family reunions with members of family that I haven't seen in years, just because it is, for me, just quite a negative experience a lot of the time, because you do get tarnished with the same brush as like a drug user or like an alcoholic or just like some, you know, skid mark on the underpants of society, to use the dodgeball quote.
Yeah, that must be difficult, mate, because they're kind of trying to, well, they think they have the answers before you even get to state your case. What about after school? What did you do and how did you get on with that?
After school, I went to do a tax school apprentice program for a company called KPMG, a very big, well-renowned international firm. And I remember as clear as day the reactions I got from my family when I announced that that was something that I'd been accepted to. And it was just, oh, I've seen that company in the paper, you know, you're going to do well there, son, you know, buckle down, and maybe in 20 years time you're going to have, you know, like a wife, kids, the white picket fence and a Land Rover outside, and that's just what you've been chalked up to do instantly, you know, like what about the times where you walk into the office and there's just, you know, some guy called Duncan and he's like bold, middle-aged, fat, drinking a can of Coke after can of Coke, barking orders at you, saying, you know, do this, do that, you know, and what's implied is you're my bitch, son. So, like, going round in circles there, but the point was, sometimes if you say something to like family members and friends, it gets instantly accepted as being like a great path, even though they're not really thinking that deeply about what's best for you and what's best for your potential and your skill set. And I've always been a very socially interactive person, but also a very deep thinker and also quite an analytical thinker. And that type of character, when you mix it into a corporate dynamic, I'm always going to be a little bit too outspoken, a little bit too aggressive, and a little bit like, well, why is things working like this? Why can't it be like this? Oh, you're a junior, you don't have the authority to chime in on things like that. Well, that's just bullshit, isn't it? Because I can clearly see a flaw in the way that that's working. And even if I'm a junior or the CEO, surely the company's efficiency is going to be bettered by that small little bit of insight. And I just don't like the very static and the very like overly structured way of doing things, you know? Like, when I'm a professional poker player now, I'm not calling up other professional poker players to have a meeting about a meeting where there's just another guy who's just being like taking minutes, wasting time. It's not happening. Like, for example, a fellow professional poker player there just called me. And he said, oh, you know, these games are looking really good at the moment. I think that that's going to be a good use of our time going forward. It was like a minute and a half phone call. And then I said, all right, thanks, mate. Poker, and that's what I really like about the discipline, is focused on efficiency, you know, because everything becomes an hourly rate. What can I expect to make in this hour if I put in my 100% output, 80% output, 60% output? And those things just don't really wash in a corporate setting. So, you know, I had to break away from that quite quickly.
Yeah, mate, it's tough to escape those external influences and pressures. So how did you get out that job? How did you get out the corporate noose?
I just woke up one day and I realised that I wasn't the person that I knew I should be. You know, I was driving around in some company car, like acting like the Billy Big Bollocks. And it all felt like, you know, that kind of imposter syndrome thing. And I know that looking back at it now. But at the time, I just remember quite vividly, actually, waking up one morning, looking at myself in the mirror, like I put on a bit of weight. I was having a fucking Boots meal deal every lunchtime. And, you know, if I didn't have time to do anything, I'd just like put a microwave meal on. And like before that point, I was really into fitness and I'd been, you know, like running all the time. And I'd stopped doing all of that because I felt like I didn't have any time for myself, which is, I think, how the corporate world grips you. And that's something that I realized that I had to do something about quickly. So before we met, I quit that job. I say quit, I essentially made them fire me. I just stopped putting in any effort whatsoever. I just stopped putting in any effort whatsoever. Like, I realised if I coasted out, got a few more pay packets, that would put me in good stead for doing something else, because it was quite a well-paid job, you know. Like, at that age, I was getting about just under 2,000, you know, in the account every month. And that was pretty good money, you know. And But again, by the time you've spent your rent, you've bought your train ticket from, I was living in Twickenham to London, that's also like surprisingly long commute. All these things were gobbling up and all these things didn't make sense, you know. Like, why am I travelling an hour to a job I don't like to make money in something that I find boring? And so it was during that time, actually, that I started kind of getting into poker. Because on my lunch breaks and stuff, I was just like watching YouTube videos, and like I stumbled across some of these videos. And I thought, well, that looks interesting, because I've always been good at mental maths and I've always been good at psychology, and just I've always been quite an assertive presence in the room. And I think all of those things lent to poker. And basically, I obviously wasn't anywhere near good enough to just start playing poker professionally at that point. It takes quite a while to craft that skill. But it certainly gave me the opportunity as like a vehicle to freedom, right? So I left that job and I just ended up sort of bumming around for a couple of months, watching more poker videos and sort of trying to play like some small £30 tournaments in the local casino or whatever, just to try and like build my skills. And then eventually, you know, lo and behold, the thing that had corrupted me, or the thing that had kind of led me astray before, which was obviously the family and societal pressures, pushed me into taking some other action. So I ended up applying last minute for Cardiff University to do marketing, business management and marketing, and got into that. And that was where like the new chapter of my life started, really.
I just want to jump out of your progression into poker for a second and ask you a different type of question, mate. Have you experienced severe lows in your life? Perhaps rock bottom? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, like last year I was basically broke. And last year I was kind of getting a bit fed up with myself because I was in these cycles where, you know, I'd do quite well, I'd like win a big tournament, or like I'd just have a nice run on cash games or something, and I'd make some money for myself and I'd have it. And then I'd just get too comfortable, start going out, start drinking, start socializing with my non-poker friends. Before you know it, you've barely played any poker for 2 weeks and you're back to square one, you know? So it teaches you that you need to be disciplined. And I think that I've definitely got to grips with a lot of those issues better over the last year than any other year. And I think that the realization was, at times last year, I was so miserable. I remember I went to see a guy who I'd met through a friend who was a sports betting professional. And this time last year, I had no money to my name. And I was going to meet him in Bournemouth. So I borrowed my granddad's van, right? And halfway down to Bournemouth, I'm going around like a wet country road, like the sat nav's taken me like off the motorway for some reason. I didn't know what was going on. Anyway, I'm following this route. I come round the corner, there's like a massive Range Rover in a one track road. It's slippy, so I've like tried to like get around the Range Rover around the side, and the car's just flipped into the side. And you know, like it sometimes feels like, when I look back at that moment, it felt like that was like my destiny at the time, because I had pissed away my bankroll and I hadn't respected myself and I hadn't done the things that I needed to do. And then sometimes in life, I've always believed in like finding like symmetries and patterns with these things that are happening, and that there's some sort of like non-logical force that is like trying to prove a point to you if you can join the dots together. And at that point, you know, I was down in the dumps. You know, I've just completely fucked my granddad's car. You know, the window's gone, the door's dented. I can just about get it running again so I can get down to Bournemouth and then, you know, borrow some money from my friend to get the car fixed and then drive back. But that was almost like a real motivator for me, because I was like, when I was just sat there in that moment in the ditch, I was just like, fucking hell, like I've hit rock bottom here. Like this, it doesn't get worse than this, you know. Like I was en route to sort myself out. Like I've turned around the corner, there's a massive fuck off Range Rover coming towards me. I've got nowhere to go. I'm not going to go through the Range Rover, so I'm going to have to try and get around the outside. You know, the 5 seconds that happened felt like 10 minutes. You know, because it's all going in slow motion. You're like, oh, I've got to get round, and then you just sort of like arse over tit in the side of the road. Luckily, the person that was in that car had pulled over and helped me to get the car back on and get it running again. But there's like glass everywhere. I've not got 2 pennies to rub together, and you know, I was just feeling like it was like a sign that things needed to change. And when I met that guy, somehow managed to pull it out the bag, and you know, he believed in me, and he became a good friend and someone that I was working with quite closely, and he gave me the chance to have another shot at poker. And you know, I made him and myself a good bit of money, and then we settled up after about 3 or 4 months, and ever since I've been on kind of my own journey and been building it slowly rather than just sort of like running around Europe punting it away, you know. So it's been a hell of a ride in just 1 year.
The roller coaster of life continues, eh? Thank you for sharing that story, mate. Back into the story of how you became a professional poker player. During your university days, when was it you realised you could make some money playing poker?
Just quite quickly, because we were all basically novices in that university poker game. But from my limited understanding of the game and what I'd watched on videos and just trying to put that into action, I just felt a lot more comfortable than I think a lot of the people around the table. And I think I was making quite good decisions and playing at a pretty reasonable level based on the amount of time I'd put in quite quickly. So I think it was instantly motivating to see that, okay, if I've sat down and watched this video and thought critically about it the night before, I could go into that university poker game and I could feel like I could develop some sort of edges against these guys. And some of them were in like their second and third years, and to me they just didn't seem to be as good as I thought they would be, because it's quite an intimidating thing, poker, right? You go into a room, people are being dealing cards around, people are staring at each other, there's a lot of like tension in the air, there's a lot of kind of like fighting over these pots. But I wouldn't give it the cliche that I felt at home, but I definitely give it the feeling of just like, yeah, this is somewhere where I want to progress and this is something that I want to develop in, which I hadn't actually had that hunger for a while, apart from like sports or like extracurricular stuff, you know, like just like with skiing. I've been lucky enough to go quite often with my family. And every year I wanted to develop something. And at the start, that was like making sure that I can do a parallel ski. And then it was like, I want to try and ski backwards. I want to do some jumps. I want to like race. And I hadn't had that the same energy about school or about the corporate job. But then poker again just opened my eyes to something that was meritocratic, you know, that the more work you put in, the more you get out, and the more effort you put in. So I think I really enjoyed it from the get-go for that reason.
So you already knew by the sounds of it that the virtual world of poker existed. In the poker society, I take it they're playing live games within the group and also going to the casino. Where were you enjoying that sort of, like, where were you strong, and what were you, like, I suppose, focusing your time on at that point?
I was realising that these games weren't, like, particularly tough, the ones at the society, and they were only once a week, you know, and I had the hunger. I wanted to play, I wanted to get better. I think at the start, because I'd always been quite, like, reluctant to, like, really study hard on things, I didn't get that study bug that quickly with it. I just wanted to play and play and play. And I've always been quite an intuitive type person. So I thought that just, I was playing a lot of like super low stakes online, you know, like $1, $2 tournaments, and just like sitting there at the computer desk in my room, just, you know, working my ass off. And that was what hit home, because all of a sudden I'd go back to the society game the next week and I'd feel like a stronger player, and then the next week an even stronger player, and it just felt like there was just a natural development there, because you know, I'd been pining for something to sink my teeth into. Over the years it had been very cyclical, so it'd be like golf in the summer, you know, skiing in the winter, I play some table tennis, you know, I tried squash. I'd even just be sat there watching the Olympics being like, oh, I might call up the local archery club here. Like, that could be a bit of a laugh, you know? Like, I was one of those guys that just wanted to try everything and wanted to find something. In retrospect, I didn't know that at the time, but I just wanted to find a passion. And that's what drove me with poker. There was a real passion there, because, like, I'm not like a nerdy type of maths guy, but I've got like a good arithmetic ability, and I like the psychological aspect of it as well. And it was just like, well, these things, if I like do well at this, and if I put a lot of effort in, I'm gonna take this take this somewhere. And I just realised that from the start, and I just kept playing and playing and playing. And, you know, like in many, many aspects of my life, I don't think I worked as hard as I could at the start. I was just more wanting to play, play, play. But I think that was a driving force, the passion I found in the game.
So you've got that passion, like with anything, you've got it from the beginning. When was it that you communicated this to your parents? And how did that go down?
Yeah, they had an idea because, like, you know, during the summers and that, and sometimes when I'm going home for the winter, I'd be like, oh, I want to go and play this tournament. And they were just sort of like, you know, I think that their reaction was kind of like, oh, this is just like a phase he's going through. He's like found his little thing at university, like let him be type thing. And I don't think it's very serious or like that. It's not that impactful at that point because they didn't realise the amount of poker I was playing at university. You know, they probably thought I was going to all the lectures and colour coding my notes and sitting at the front saying, yes, sir, please, sir, give me one more slide, sir. Like, I just can't get enough of this insight from someone that's teaching business that has basically failed at business and now has to be a lecturer to pay the bills. Like, you know, we'll get onto that, but like... and that might sound cocky or arrogant, but that's just the way I see it, you know. And fair enough if people want to do like a vocational style uni course, but doing business management is essentially a waste of time. You should just try and start your own business and have a go at it. And if you fail, like try and start something else. If not, look for some investment. Just keep trying. And that's what I did with poker. And that eventually, going back to your question, that I always had a feeling that my parents would be on board with it eventually, which they now are. But unfortunately, parents, as you'll know from your lifestyle as well, they're just very results orientated, you know. Like, I could, let's say, for example, I went to a tournament and it's like a 100 euro buy-in, and I just got completely pissed for like 2 days. And I won the tournament and it was like 15,000 for the winner or something. I'm just going to go back to them with the trophy and the 15 grand being like, look, mum, look, dad, I've won this trophy. And they're just like, oh, that's brilliant. He must be such an amazing player. And then there've been situations where like I've been grinding my ass off on this seat, like working my ass off for 2 days, drinking water, going for a run before the tournament, you know, and I've come like 10th. And I've got like 800, which, you know, sounds like a nice sum of money. But when you're that close and there was like the big money up top, it feels like a kick in the teeth. So with that results orientated nature of the parents, all you've got to do is hope in poker, because it could be a cruel game, you know, like the maths and the variance of the game. Don't always lead you to success, even if you're putting yourself into situations that you'd call as being plus expected value situations, i.e. situations where, you know, all the chips are going in. I've got 70% chance to win and my opponent's got 30% chance to win. You know, if we're betting $100 each at the time, my share of the pot is $140, right? So if that situation were to happen 100 times, my share of the pot would be $14,000 and his share of the pot would be $6,000. But there's nothing in math stopping him from just winning that pot every single time, you know, because they're just individual occurrences. They're actually not related whatsoever. So it's not like 30%, you know, times 100 or whatever, or to the power of 100. It doesn't work like that because the situations aren't linked. There's nothing stopping that guy from just winning every pot against me. And this happens quite a lot in poker, and that's why it's important to, pace yourself on the journey.
So when did you see that first kind of big win that gave you the confidence to keep pursuing?
So there was a couple of times at uni where I was grinding stakes so low that even if you won like a huge tournament, you're not going to win much more than like $500, which obviously as a student is a lot of money, but nowadays, if you're trying to put like food on the table and I'm like renting a place in Bratislava and blah blah blah, 500 doesn't go that far. So I think the first big win I had was in third year towards the end of my university career. I played like 10 tournaments on a Sunday. I come first in a $16.50 buy-in for 3,000, and then also like got a decent run for like 300 or 400. So like that day I won like $3,000, and I was just staring at my account balance being like, oh my god, this is incredible. Like, I've never seen so much money in my PokerStars balance, right? And then the next day I got the hunger for it, right? So like, I'd had a few drinks with my mates after that, celebrating a little bit. I'd gone to sleep, woken up, and within 2 minutes I was just back at the desk grinding away. I was just like, I can't wait to get back in. And sometimes in poker you just get like the feeling that you want to play and that you're going to do well, and that was one of those days where you just jump out of bed with the heart of a lion, just ready to roar, you know. You just want to hit the tables. And then that day I also came first in another tournament. It was like a $22 for like 2.2k or something. So within a couple of days I'd made probably about $4,000 profit. And at the time that was, you know, that set me up for a summer of traveling. And, you know, that was what I think I did really well at that point in poker, because I knew that I wasn't really a strong enough player to become like a professional, i.e. to make like a really good living from the game. But once I'd made some money, I wasn't just going to start playing high stakes and, you know, like piling it into one tournament on the off chance that I win that for like a million or something. No. I just thought, right, now it's the end of third year, I've got my degree, I'm going to go travelling and see the world a bit, and poker will always be there, type thing. Whether or not that was the best decision, I don't know, because now looking back, that kind of stunted my growth in poker for a couple of years, because I did have quite a nice bankroll then to just start playing slightly bigger games and start doing what I wanted to do. But I think sometimes in life you've just got to go with your heart, right? Like, I wanted to go traveling, I wanted to go to like Hideout Festival, I wanted to go to Spain. I wanted to go to the Isle of Wight. You know, I wanted to do loads of things, and this money allowed me that freedom. Whereas if I hadn't have won that, I wouldn't have had the chance to send off my university career with that kind of summer. So it's interesting, because I know you're quite the same as well. You're quite harsh on yourself, and I can be that too. And I think, you know, I've just gone through like a circular motion of being like, oh, was that a good idea? Was that a bad idea? But I think what I do in poker, which is quite atypical for a poker player, is I tend to follow my heart a lot more than the logic. And that can hurt me and help me. And it helps me in these kind of like non-poker aspects, but it can hurt me when you're under a lot of pressure and like your emotions are high.
So at university, and I suppose coming out of it, how many hours a week were you putting into your poker?
About 30, maybe some weeks a bit more. But I was also running like a sports betting blog at the time, and I was getting quite a bit of...
Yeah, you got traction on that, didn't you?
Yeah, I got quite a lot of engagement and following, and that... In the second year, I wasn't really playing poker at all. It was the first year I was playing, and in the first year, I was like naturally talented, but I was just making enough money so I could go partying at the weekend, basically. It was just as simple as that, right? I think a lot of people slave away and then realize that they regretted the fact that they didn't have a balance. But it's tough to find that balance when you're passionate about something, but you're also as social as I am. I can't be chained to the laptop for 12 hours a day with no social interaction. I've tried it before. I've lasted about 3 or 4 days. By the fifth day, I'm waking up and I just don't even have the self-respect to fucking jump in the shower or brush my teeth. You know, it's that brutal.
So why? What were the reasons for coming out of the sports betting blog? And how did you navigate your way back into the poker world?
Yeah, I think it was because that sports betting, if you're trying to sell people like betting advice and tips, it's very saturated by a load of guys. You know, anyone can make a Twitter account and start like following a load of people, get some followers back, and just put a load of rubbish on there. I was trying to structure it to help people, but you know, I think the irony was, looking back, you know, I was 21, 22 years old. I didn't really know that much about sports betting. I just knew from like working with the maths and the odds side of things. Like, in terms of the quality of the website and like the non-betting advice, I think it was pretty good. But the actual quality of the tips itself, you know, I'd probably cringe looking back on those these days, because I just didn't really have a clue. It was just like, it was all packaged in a nice gift wrap, and you know, like it was a nice thing. So I wasn't like an expert at that either. That was just something I'd spent like a year and a half on. And you know, that I realized basically that there was no longevity in that. It was a saturated market. There was a lot of people like chancing it on Twitter, and I wasn't going to make the sort of money that I needed to, you know, basically brush off the parental and family concerns, but also make enough money that I, you know, I could go traveling and do my own thing. So again, you know, this has been a common theme in my life, sort of toying with something, just on the brink of achieving something that I deem to be great or like very good, and just leaving it for something else. So I'd done that with poker, and I was really pissed off that I'd left poker in the doldrums, because it was always something that I was slowly getting better at, and it didn't feel like forced or like rushed or anything. So yeah, I went back to poker after that, but again, I'd been out of the game for about a year or so, like, and poker moves fast, you know, like if you're not playing and you're not keeping your mind sharp, you're gonna fall behind the curve. So took another 6 months to get it back, but I just got a job in sports betting in London, which, you know, I was, in my naive self, because I didn't have any other thing lined up, I thought that would be, it wouldn't be so corporate, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean, mate. I think there's an element of curiosity here as well. You know, you've got an interest in sports betting, and you're also trying to balance your passions with perhaps conforming to what society expects of you. So how did this go? How did this venture into the sports betting industry turn out?
Yeah, because I was passionate about sports betting, but I was mostly passionate about, you know, like the mathematical side of it, the modelling, how they, you know, I'd always look in, like, even from a young age, look in the sports betting shops and be like, how is that team, that prize to win? Like, where does that number come from? You know, like, who's creating that? That's what I wanted to get to grips with. But, you know, my natural curiosity for that dwindled when I realized that it's basically just an algorithm that's input into the computer that spits out a number for you, you know? I had these, like, romanticized views or, like, visions of there just being like a group of guys like watching the games or something, like talking it out, you know, just like really kind of like getting to grips with what that price should be, or like from all of the like human factors, like, oh, he's putting out this formation instead of that formation this week, that's probably going to play quite well against that side. But yeah, but their centre back's injured, so with their striker who's 6'6" up top, the target man, they're going to be likely to have the advantage. Yeah, but what about the weather? You know, they didn't play well when it was raining last time and all that kind of thing. But it's not like that. It's just those factors are great and they're all numerized in some way, but they're just chucked into an algorithm that are run by a load of like Cambridge and Oxford maths geniuses. And, you know, they're the guys that are spitting out the numbers that are making the money. But when I was in this company, I started to realize that, again, the guys that are making all the money are these maths guys, and they're getting paid like 30k a year. There's some guy in his office swanning around on like 100k, and what value is he adding here?
Yeah, this is when I came to visit you in London at this time, didn't I?
Well, we just had a good old-fashioned bender, didn't we, really? Yeah.
Good old-fashioned knees up, mate. Yeah, those 5 days whizzed on by. I don't remember much at all. reflecting back on that, I do remember actually being quite unhappy, and I think you were too. I do remember you were in the flat in London, so you weren't living with your parents and having that pressure of someone looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, and that was good and bad. It was good in the way that job was structured, and I really liked this. It was my most favourite thing about the job was it was night shifts. Okay, so you'd get a bit more of a premium for your money, like you get paid a bit more. It is a bit detrimental to your health working nights, and we'll get like into that later because that's something that I'm starting to tackle now again for like the 50th time. But but it was four nights on, four nights off. So that gave me the chance to rekindle my passion for poker, and it gave me some time to, you know, four nights off is quite a long time because you've essentially got four whole days to do whatever you want. And I started grinding a lot more online poker and like building up a bankroll on a website called Sky Poker, where I was playing like cash games. And you know, it got to the stage where, like you said, I wasn't happy with where I was. I wasn't happy with my progression or what I saw to be the potential progression in this role, which would be essentially rot away at the desk until someone taps you on the shoulder and says, oh, you're middle management now, you've been here for 15 years, you know, it wasn't interesting to me whatsoever, like doing that, because, you know, with all due respect, like there were some pretty smart people in that office, but there was a lot of incompetence, and that's not motivating either if you're someone who's got the work ethic to be a self-starter, but you're just surrounded by obstacles all the time. So again, you know, for the second or third time now, poker, let's get back into that. Why have I been wasting my time doing this? But again, being too harsh on myself, not realizing that that's part of the learning curve, right? It's not like I was ever the type of guy that was just going to take poker and just like close my door in my uni room and just work my ass off and just, you know, play. I needed the social interaction. I needed the stimulation from trying other things as well to realize that that was going to be the thing that I needed to start working on. And that's what I started doing. I worked that job for about 18 months. The first 6 months, I put my all into the job. After that, I realized it probably wasn't going to make me happy or make me the money that I wanted for it to be necessary to be working in London, which is somewhere I find to be quite a cold and empty place.
When do you start calling yourself a professional poker player then?
That's the million-dollar question, because essentially, right, my grandma could play a bit of online and she's not got a job, you know, she's retired, but if she won a fiver that day, she could be like, right, well, I'm a professional poker player now.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
All right, guys, Sid Phillips here. That's the end of part one. Part two will be released shortly. In the meantime, if you've got any feedback for me or if you want to help me in any kind of way, I'd love to hear from you. My email is sid@mail.uk. Thank you very much for listening, and hopefully you'll join me on the next podcast.